Okay, everybody, let's get started.
But small, but quality.
That's right.
Five is here. We need to have a vote on that.
Okay, we got to
carry some weight.
Yeah, right. Okay.
So let's think of something to vote on.
Well, we're going to vote on. We got something to vote on.
How are you?
Okay, everybody. Settle down. Munzik Wagner, your moderator, and you're here to learn, and there'll be a pop quiz. Anyway, that's what Richard said he was here for. Let's remember that. Well, thank you all for coming. This is an organization that is nigh on to 15 years old. I am not a great advocate of aging myself, but I really think some wonderful things have happened since we first became a maritime heritage, regional maritime heritage organization.
It's 20 years in May.
20
this year. You
know what I mean. Okay. There have been several new organizations that have popped up since that first day that we decided that we were it as far as maritime heritage in British Columbia, Washington, and Oregon. The Britannia Shipyard in Stevenson was not yet a museum, nor was a Naval Undersea Museum in Bangor. Is it Bangor?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Keyboard.
Okay. The Northwest Maritime Heritage Center is opened up in Port Townsend. Gig Harbor has a maritime museum. Tacoma has a maritime museum. All these things have happened since we first gathered. The Center for Wooden Boats has a second campus. Gray's Harbor has grabbed yet more acreage. and Pemberton, which did have a maritime museum, then it closed down, and now it has a new Naval Maritime Museum in Bremerton. So, and a lot of things are about to happen too in Everett. We'll hear more about that in Coos Bay, the heritage area that we've been lobbying for, the Center for Wooden Boats continuing to expand, and Great Harbor will be expanding till the earth cools.
I have do not want to do anything below the Columbia River.
You got a new project in Olympia. It's called Grace Harbor Historic Seaport East.
So we'll go around the table, starting on my right, and everybody say who they are and what organization or organizations they're involved in.
Right? Fowler, involved in a lot of things, but there with Dick kind of at the beginning through the centennial in 1990 when this organization started and still kicking.
Pat Hartle, Northwest Seaport and Puget Sound Maritime Historical Society, and I'm with them, still kicking. But it life goes on, and we just keep trucking around.
Les Bolton, Grace Harbor Historical Seaport, and the American Sail Training Association.
Dick Berg, Bainbridge Island Historical Society and Museum.
Tom Cashman, Boston Waterway Seaport, and Dick, while you're not an advocate of aging, you do it quite well.
Dan Withers from Baton Crest of America and Puget Sound Maritime Historical Society. And Secretary.
Dan Withers.
I'm Sam Johnson, with the Maritime Museum here.
Colleen Wagner, Discovery Motors Education Center.
Betsy Davis, with Air Crew Movement.
Kay
Patterson,
Fox
Waterway Seaport,
and
Gig Harbor
Boat
Shop.
Robin
Patterson from the
Maritime
Association.
Fox Waterway Seaport. How about the International Tugs?
That's
well,
the RCA,
yeah. Oh, I'm sorry.
Can you finish your off? Dan Adams,
Fox
Waterway Seaport.
And Mike Adams, Fox Waterway Seaport.
Richard Sullivan, Everett Maritime Museum.
Dick Wagner, Center for Wooden Boats. Our host is Sam Johnson. Our host is the Columbia River Maritime Museum. Sam Johnson is the executive director, so he's going to have some words.
I met most of you, I guess, last night, but last night I haven't met you for 20 years, I guess. That's why I didn't even recognize
you. He ages well, too.
I welcome you all here. It's like a long way to come down, and I really appreciate you coming down to both see the museum and get a good tour of this building. And after everything's over, I'd like to take you across the street to the armory and take a look at the small boat collection and big boat collection and miscellaneous junk. You'll be appalled at the lack of organization right now, but it's still recovering from finishing off of this building and moving stuff around. Anyway, I've only been here since May. I was hired to replace Jerry Ostermiller. And as most of you know, I spent the last 5 years living up in Seattle on the ship canal, restoring boats, building boats, messing about with boats, involving the center, and so on. So I look at my job here is to, not at the Oregon Museum, but at the Northwest American Museum, and that involves the whole region. So I'd like definitely to have a resource home with this group. And I think we ought to also invite the people from Coos Bay and all the way down the coast, because they're part of the Pacific Northwest. So the more action, the happier I am. I think that will be all. So welcome.
Have you responded to our urging that you become the co-coordinator for Oregon of the council?
Sure.
Hey.
Okay. Took care of that. Thank you very much.
Thanks.
Now, Dick, that's the good news. Now, Dick can give you the not so good news.
It's a lifetime.
Oh, yeah.
Never goes away.
Okay. Council business.
Well, council business. We'll go down and just kind of check off some kind of update things we have here. So I guess we'll start out with the Washington Historic Vessel Preservation Legislation Grants Program. And Dixie's been deeply involved in that with Catherine Collins of Sound Experience. And so give us an update then.
And Les as well.
And Les, that's it.
We dropped the legislation through the slot last spring. And this fall, we thought, you know, it's not the right year with the budget crunch and everything to really pursue this legislation. But we ended up getting a hearing, and we had 5 days to get ready for it. And Les and Virginia Five and Adventist and CWB provided testimony. Pat came down and supported. We had testimony from two folks, Allison Brooks, and she was neutral, but said it would be a really complimentary thing to the Heritage area, and Gary Stallio from the Historical Society testified as well. So, amazingly enough, it had a hearing, and even more amazing, it's made it out of committee. It's now at Senate Ways and Means. Senator Karen Frazier actually voted against it in committee for a portion of the bill that had to do with the excise tax being reduced on, like, classic yachts. So letting go of that part of the bill, we actually will support it in House Ways and Means and then maybe see that it gets to the floor. That's Monday. Either it happens on Monday or not this session. We've had some wonderful letters of going to Karen Frazier from people in her district, and that includes Mary Thompson and Chuck and the Worthingtons and Representative Pat Lance, whose bill this was 2 years ago, contacted her as well. If we make it out of the House, out of the committee on Monday, then, of course, they have to vote on it. But if it then goes to the House at that point, we're going to want to get lots of support. One of the ways your organizations can support this is let us know if you want to be listed under the organizations that are supporting this bill. And you can tell either Chuck or Les or me today, and we'll get that on this list the next time that we update it. We also have some postcards that show some of the kinds of vessels that could be supported by this program. And you're welcome to take some of these for your constituents. And it was very fun when the senator who sponsored it said, I've never had my name on a postcard before. So please feel free to take some. I have a whole stack here if you want one. Do you want to add anything?
Well, just that initially, looking at the structure.
Yes. Go.
Did you want to address
that? No, you go.
Okay. Shoot me if I'm wrong.
I will.
initially, we're talking about a, what we're trying to do is create a fund where there would be money that you would apply to, similar to the Heritage Capital Projects Fund that you'd make application for projects, you know, that you go through the appropriation process and, you know, you apply today and sometime before you die, hopefully, they cut loose with some money. The other pot of money would be rapid response funds for vessels that are operating, that are providing public access. You have a Coast Guard inspection, something happened, you know, you've got a problem, and you get what's called an 835, and they tell you, you will resolve this issue, or you will not be operating, you have 90 days or whatever, and so that you'd actually be able to apply to for funding, and that there would be a group, an advisory group, that would be called together. There'd be a standing advisory group, but that group would be called together when there was emergency need, and there would be a portion of the fund that would be set aside for that. And so you'd be able to get assistance if the Coast Guard stepped in and did something. Initially, we're looking at vessels, and we'd like to maintain our focus on vessels at the onset, but as the program moves forward and we hopefully hook into some a level of funding that would allow it, you know, vessel support facilities, preservation efforts for, you know, significant artifacts, that kind of thing are possible, but there are some real sensitivity issues in both the House and the Senate with regard to money down a rat hole and, you know, what's a viable vessel. And so we just need to kind of make sure that we're talking about vessels that are operational, that are providing public benefit in some form or another. And I think once we get that moving, then it'll be one of those line item things that'll roll with money coming in from a specific source.
The money is coming in from?
At this point, we're not asking for the funding. We want this year just to get the legislation in place to create the bucket and to enable Gary Staglio to work with creating the rules for it. And then coming back next year when the economy turns around to get funding, two different potential funding sources, possibly the larger amount through the same form as the Heritage Capital grants, which I think is long, but then there might be a specific revenue source for the smaller grant.
So it's not related to the boat registration fund?
No.
At this point,
you've already got a program like that, which funds
Lady Washington. And that fund will carry through. This relates.
It might be the same bucket that the new funds go into, but the voluntary checkoff money still goes through.
Right. Basically, what this does is this adds on to existing legislation that was in Washington State, if you're a boat owner, you can choose to donate a dollar to historic vessels, and that fund was originally set up to be split between the Virginia Five and the Lady Washington, and over the, I don't know, 8-9 years that it's been occurring, I think the average amount is about $6,900 a year for each vessel. So looking at that as a way to fund multiple vessels, I mean.
As I recall, when the fund for boat registration funds were only allocated to the Virginia Five and the Lady Washington, some of the other vessels said we should be included as well. And then at that time, those organizations were told wait your turn. Let us get this through first, and then you will be added later. So
right.
I think some of the other organizations that have vessels are thinking, this is a time for fairness, and we should be added in, too. So I guess that allows
right.
it to happen.
That's what the new
allows it to happen.
Yeah. Initially,
people thought there was going to be that every boater in the state, you know, and you wind up with $400,000 in the pot every year. Well, yeah, okay, there's plenty of money, or there's never plenty of money, but there'd be enough money that you could put multiple boats accessing that fund. But I mean, you know, that doesn't even pay anybody's insurance, let alone.
But as you said, Sharon Fraser is our legislator, and she's been our neighbor, and so we've known her for 20 years. She's solidly behind Maritime Heritage, Historic Vessels, and all that, as well as her husband, Tim Malone, who is a retired senior assistant attorney general. So what Karen is worried about, she's chairman of Senate Ways and Means Capital Projects, and so what she has to worry about is giving special privilege to heritage vessels. And all that money that is not coming out of excise tax, it's going into kind of general use. She has to be very sensitive of reducing that kind of amount for various purposes and favoring the kinds of things that we're doing. But she is the one who got the $160,000 for the Maritime Heritage Area consultant study, feasibility study, in regardless of the fact it was really down economy and we shouldn't have had that. So I think, as I told Betsy yesterday, I think it's going to happen. And Jim King, the lobbyist, is working with Karen to make sure that the right cutoff date for historic vessels is maintained. And then this feeling that we need to carefully craft the legislation so it doesn't look like all of us in Maritime are getting this special deal when everybody else is having to contribute and sacrifice.
Lobbyists are useful.
Jim King's been around a long time. He's a Parks and Recreation lobbyist, and I talked to my friends in Parks and Recreation, the nonprofit, and he's very effective and very highly regarded. So
okay.
He's a good person.
Chuck,
yeah.
What size of fund would make it worthwhile and valuable?
What size of
fund
would make
resources?
I don't think I understand the question.
To make it a useful.
I think if there was $100,000 in the fund, it would be useful because multiple groups could apply for smaller grants. If it had $1 million, it would be even more useful to more people. So I'm not sure.
But $100 is divided over
a lot of good
candidate votes. I mean,
obviously, the more money there is,
yeah.
The more each project can get. But I think we've seen examples where even $10,000 from a matching grant from the state. Can leverage federal funding, can leverage community support, can leverage in-kind resources. So I wouldn't disagree, $1 million is always better than $1,000. But I would argue even $100,000 going into our pool is better than zero.
This would have Washington State draw the rules.
Gary Stallion would facilitate a group of stakeholders, including folks from this group, to develop the criteria for evaluating the proposal. And he came to this forum a couple times ago, and he was interested in coming, but couldn't make it today. And he has communicated to the legislature that he could do the rulemaking for this program without it being an increase in the budget. So there's not an expense to him. Ultimately, they gave 2% for administering the program or something like that.
Which, 2% for administration, that's great.
How much do you think needs to be in order to be
I was trying to think of what revenue sources have been identified. I worry about one particular vessel being a problem.
Tom, I think your question was more along, when do you get to the critical mass?
Yeah.
At what point does it really become a viable?
$100,000 doesn't get you much. $500,000 doesn't.
$100,000 actually can get you quite a bit. I mean, we just got a $10,000 grant.
Yeah, but I mean, if 50 groups are competing for the $100,000, that's a maximum of $2,000.
But I guess the other I mean, the grant fund that we went after, we got $10,000 from the Washington Clean Diesel Program for repowering. And that clean diesel grant, that $10,000, put me up to the point where the Cheney Foundation said, you raise this much money, we'll give you $10,000. You know, so...
leverage the
fund. You know, being able to leverage that money, it really does every little bit. And, you know, the fact that we're getting funding from, you know, it's sort of a, you know, it's a buy-in from your peers that you can take to other funders.
It's not a panacea, it's not a silver bullet.
Yeah. And believe me, you know, anybody that donates $100, I am thankful.
And listening to the hearings last week, with Allison Brooks and Gary Salio, they're basically trying to be neutral, but speaking in such an supportive manner. It was really good.
And Gary is now allowed to be supportive.
Good.
They both have to be very careful because they're government employees, paid by government, and so
yeah,
can't stand the state for legal relations. So, but they go as far as they can, so that's good.
Yeah.
I think this is a very valuable step forward, and I hope we get it. But I think there's another step that we should be thinking of, and that is when we're talking about historic vessel preservation, what about places where historic vessels that float can be seen by communities that do not have their own maritime organization, you know, going, taking them to the San Juans, to Vashon Island, Bainbridge Island, places with the island. So I think that there should be a concern or a hope for gaining support of landing places for these vessels, where they really can be shown off, where people can have dock tours of them, and the public that are kind of on the small population areas an opportunity to really to see and get close contact with these vessels.
So, what's the process of joining up and getting anyone?
You honestly don't even have to write something. You just tell me or Chuck or Les.
I'll write it out.
Will you? I'll add your name. Excellent. Maybe I'll just pass one of these things around and write your name, your organization on if you want it. I'll put Master at the top of it. Can you pass this over to Tom?
I'm fine. I
need
to
know that word.
Thank you.
Because I would have a question. Would it benefit this role of the Clinton Maritime Day Museum to make with the public?
No.
Absolutely.
You think it would? Don't you think our legislators would get confused and going, oh, are we going to do a German connect?
I don't think so. You think that would be problematic? I think.
Well, I think, you know, what I'm going to do is come on Monday and testify on behalf of the council, but that's kind of the Washington organization's. For that.
I should put your name down if you're willing to, and then we'll work it out, and we'll include it if we can do it in a way that's clear that this is an outside endorsement from the family.
We clearly believe in this thing.
Oh, that's great.
I think that we'll just do it kind of the council, and of course we're kind of nominated now by the Washington reps, but we're pleased to have the wider support.
North River Historic Seaport. Don't forget North River.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah, all right.
Right.
The other thing I have a question about.
Thanks for your good work.
Newspaper editorials, have you listed the newspapers? And
We didn't really think we were doing this.
2 weeks ago, we wouldn't have had this conversation at all. I think part of the deal is this is a really difficult year, and this is feel-good legislation, and there's no money involved. You know, so I mean, it's an easy. Mm-hmm. I can do this, and I think there's a willingness to do it, and I think that would be far more effective to keep a low profile, and if we start to hit a roadblock. Find out who's on the committee, keep those emails and start pushing. And
I think the editorial or the public message is better if we can focus on ways that collectively or individually we're bringing money into our local economy, because I think that's the message we're giving the legislators. Not only are we preserving historic fabric of Bethel, but we're helping build jobs and draw dollars to the state, tourism dollars, film dollars, et cetera. And I think right now, if we put something out that said, we're going to get this from the state, then people can start having the conversation. The arts groups or heritage groups are getting money, and Medicare patients aren't going to get health care or something. And I think what we need to do is position our value not only for the value we all know in our hearts, but also the economic.
We were told at the beginning of the session, leading, you know, by the governor and representatives, that this is life, health, and public safety related. You guys should not be out there coming in and asking us for funding, because there isn't any. So it just makes you guys look like special privilege kind of people. So that's why it's under the radar screen right now, and working directly with the legislators, the friendly legislators who can help us get through the process without a lot of attention. So, and then next year, when maybe money is available, we'll come back, and if things turn around, then that's the time to push ahead.
Well, I'll just put it in the back of your mind that the Daily Historian serves as Washington, and also owns a show paper on Long Beach. And Steve would be glad to write an editorial. That's up to your
time.
Sure. Well, and truly, we have the full support of the Coastal Caucus, which is Wakayton County around all the way to Jefferson. So, you know, that there won't be a problem at all.
One last statement is, at the hearing, we tried to talk about our economic value, and Les did well, Catherine did well on that. And so we now would like to have some way to tally for the Maritime Heritage efforts in our region what we're bringing to the local economy. I haven't had time to put together a survey. The Washington Museum Association does a survey I haven't had time to look at. But fundamentally, we'd like to pull you guys and the other people on the Heritage Council list and just ask how many jobs you're putting in the local economy, how many dollars are you spending in your local economy, how are you helping kids enter the trades or the maritime industry, and then anything else that you think helps with this message.
Participant days.
Oh, God, yes, right.
We need a Maritime Heritage Economic Impact Statement, like
correct,
a lot of other organizations,
correct,
social service are putting together. This,
yes,
is why we're of value to not just ourselves and our love of maritime history, but to the economy and economic development and all that. So,
well, didn't the Maritime Heritage Area, didn't they collect anything on the economic status of it?
I asked Allison, and she said no,
nope,
that wasn't
nope,
part of it.
Oops.
Well, God.
But I'll still talk to Kurt to see what he has to see what we can work from. And so we won't, nothing's wasted to ask. So we have some specific questions we need to ask everybody now.
And that can be a follow-up of the, you know, the feasibility study. And as that information becomes available, as Betsy talked about, and put it together, then that can go to Norm Dix and all our congressional delegation. They're the ones who are going to have to, after the National Park Service says okay, they're the ones Congress is going to have to designate it. So that's the time when we can add the information.
And for economic impact, I think that's in Washington and Oregon.
Oh, yeah.
I think that's confusing.
British Columbia, too. We're a region. Cascadia. Okay.
Maritime area?
Those of you who don't know what the National Maritime Heritage Area is, this is the one-page fact sheet. It's a little bit out of date right now, but this gives you the basics on Heritage Area Program under the National Park Service. And basically, it's not a national park program, but it does provide nationally, and I think there are 46 congressionally designated national heritage areas in the United States now, not 37. But very few of them are west of the Mississippi. So ours would be basically a kind of an expansion of what we do within the council. Networking, marketing, down at the bottom of the council's background and future projects was always that we have funding, we have staff and all that to do cross-marketing and all kinds of activities which would highlight our sites, our ships, our organizations within the region. So this is another step through the federal government to do that. So we, you have to have a feasibility study first of the heritage area to then send to National Park Service and to Congress to have you designated to get part of the about a little less than $1 million a year, which has been going into funding heritage areas. That doesn't fund staff for all of these 46 heritage areas, but again, it gives you basic funding which you are supposed to leverage, and then your organizations, if they want to become involved in it, have to opt in and help fund this cooperative effort. But it's an effort to provide a basic structure and a little staff to start this regional cross-marketing effort, cross-resource sharing effort through a National Heritage Area designation. And as I mentioned, basically through Karen Fraser and a few of our legislative friends, we got $150,000 at a time in the downturn in the legislature when we should not have qualified for that money at all. That was a real surprise to get that. So we got the $150,000, and then there was a steering committee formed, and some of those people are the Washington Trust for Historic Preservation legislators, Representative Pat Lance, Karen Fraser is on that group, Pat Lance from Dick Harbor, who was part of the Heritage Caucus before she left the legislature, and I'm the kind of Maritime Heritage organizational representative on the steering committee. So we've been meeting for over a year on this feasibility study, and the consultants have been at work to put the feasibility study together. Hold public hearings, get input from around the region, and make that happen so we can submit a document to the National Park Service and to Congress. That document is basically put together. We'll have our next and I think final steering committee meeting on 26th of this month to receive the report and give the okay to move it forward. So it's been an interesting process. At the very beginning, we told consultants you ought to go to the stakeholders right up front. You ought to go to the Maritime Heritage Organizations and see what they think about this whole concept, and then you can develop support, because the individual organizations already have legislative support and can help you out. And the consultant said, well, based upon our other projects like the scenic byways and all that, we need to go to the governmental agencies, the tribes, and all of those people first to get buy-off from them. We'll talk to you guys later. Well, lo and behold, they come to the end of the process after almost a year. They still haven't kind of come to us. And they all of a sudden find out they don't have stakeholder support from the maritime organizations in the various areas. And this area is all of coastal Washington and all of Puget Sound, inward or short from the shoreline into about 2 or 3 miles, I think.
A quarter of a mile.
So that is the region. So we gathered a group in Port Townsend. We told them, you need to have a Maritime Stakeholders Summit meeting. And we had that in September. And a lot of us met up there at the New Northwest Maritime Center and told the consultants a little bit about our concerns. And they asked us for letters of support and all of that. That kind of support was provided. So we think that it's pretty well put together, and that we'll have success as this whole feasibility study report moves ahead. And you know, we have in Washington a rather powerful congressional delegation, and still feel that we will have in the future. So we think that we can get our designation for the National Maritime Heritage Area. This will be the only totally maritime heritage themed heritage area in the United States. Salem has the Salem Historic Maritime Heritage Organization or area site, but they are also combined with the Saugus Iron Works National Historic Site, so it's a blended area, so this would be the only maritime heritage area. And Sam and I were talking, there is already a, what's it called, Sam, down here?
I don't think they really have too many.
Lucent, Columbia River, Pacific Heritage Area.
National Heritage Area.
Yeah. So, Sam, you want to talk a little bit about their focus and how it's a little different from...
Well, I don't know a lot about it. I've not been invited to be on the committee, and I've not been too busy to be forced to, or force myself on them, although they tell me I can join. But what I've learned is Shorebank Cascadia Enterprises, part of Shorebank Pacific, based in Astoria, Milwaukee, seem to have taken the lead on this. And the way, if you know anything about Shorebank Cascadia, what they do is they take federal dollars, I don't exactly understand the whole process, but from the big banks have to give out a certain amount of money to banks like Shorebank to give out as high-risk, low-interest loans for septic system renewals and housing and so on and so forth, sort of benefiting people who can't otherwise afford to get that money. John Bird is the head of that, the Shorebank Cascadia, and he's, as far as I can tell, taken over the whole process of developing this National Heritage Area. A couple months ago, there were arguments on how far up the river it should go, and should it include Skamakaway and Clatskanie and so on, and Arkansas, rather. And I think they finally decided it should go all the way up and include the, all of Puget Island and then come down this side of the river. The idea, as I understand it, however, is that they're going to take their model that they use in making high-risk, low-interest loans and apply it to this heritage area. And so it's not going to have a major tourism potential. They told me very bluntly that no, I went to them to see if we could help them to work with the Park Service and others and use our train depot, the waiting room and so on from 1925, restore that, use that as a visitor center. Perfect, you know, for parking and everything else. And they said, we're not going to have anything like that. So I'm not sure where they're going with this thing at this point. David Gamansky is the head of the Lewis and Clark National Park here, and I don't think he's been terribly involved in taking over control, so I think it's kind of wallowing around in the water right now.
So it's totally different focus than what we're talking about with tourism development, economic development of a kind of a broader perspective. And so it's interesting because early on we talked about whether this heritage area should just be kind of Puget Sound. And Les Bolton raised his hand, and because he has kind of, he's on the edge. He could belong to Columbia Pacific Heritage Area, or he could belong to ours up there. And Les said,
he tried California.
Yeah, yeah.
I want to go where the money is.
I want to go where the money is. And the power. So he said, I want to be affiliated with the council and all you guys. So I opt into your heritage area. So that we are trying to not impinge upon Columbia Pacific's region and turf. So, but Les is included in our heritage area. Which
what about Little Bay? Where does that?
Which?
What I'm told is that the heritage area here actually rolls all the way up and around the Long Beach Peninsula right. Into the Willow Pond.
Right. Over the top and Port Angeles, Port Townsend.
Pretty good sense.
Yeah. So that's the kind of status, and even again in this tough economy, we think that in concept we've got a really good chance to be designated and to move ahead, so we'll be well positioned for hopefully when the economy really starts returning and moving forward again.
I will make a better report on this next meeting when I learn more.
I'd like to add one thing. When I said the quarter mile, but quarter mile is continuous water, so it comes in through the locks and includes Lake Union, so that those of us that are on Lake Union are included in the heritage area. It probably could include Lake Washington too if somebody decided to do something in Lake Washington, but it's continuous in the water area, so it can go around up a river if you wanted to, whatever.
So anyway, I think that's the report on that. So again, with the vessel preservation grant legislation, with heritage area legislation, we're moving ahead under the radar screen quietly, but very good progress. So. The next one was the National Maritime Heritage Center in BC, and I don't know if Joan Thornley isn't here, was the other coordinator from D.C., but do you know anything? What's the latest about?
Well, just what we got a couple of weeks ago, that the original funding of it was guaranteed by British Columbia, the provincial government, as well as by the national, the federal government. However, now the new premier for British Columbia, for B.C., has pulled out their funding. So without the provincial funding, it's been declared that the project is dead at this point. The federal won't be able to have enough to cover the thing, so the national maritime thing that was going to be up at North Vancouver is down the tube. Now, everything that dies in a political world can come alive again, but they really don't. The Vancouver Sun and so on doesn't really think that there's much coming up about it.
I think we should explain that this is a project, I can't remember how many millions of dollars, but as you know, there is a Maritime Museum of the Atlantic at Halifax, there's a Fisheries Museum of the Atlantic at Lunenburg, and there is nothing for the Pacific Coast. So this would be a federal center, actually, but developed by North Vancouver and all of that for the West Coast. So it would include British Columbia, the Yukon, Northwest Territories, and all of that. So it would be a major center at the site of the former, I think, Victory Shipyard or Burrard Shipyard in North Van. And there are some facilities there, buildings that they're trying to save, and this would be the location. It's also an economic development, redevelopment, waterfront redevelopment project for the city of North Vancouver. Many of you know also that the city of Vancouver and the residents of the Kitsilano Peninsula would like the Vancouver Maritime Museum to be relocated. They don't like that museum in their residential area now, and so they would like it to leave. And there's a lot of concern about it, Vancouver Maritime Museum leaving the city of Vancouver proper, but I think there's finally agreement that, yes, we could have something in North Van. Vancouver Maritime Museum is not doing too well financially, but the economic crisis produces some very, I think, positive opportunities also. It kind of gets rid of some old turf kinds of personality situations which block kind of progress. So I think British Columbia, Vancouver, and all are learning, just as we've preached for years, that cooperation works better than competition, especially in these tough times. So that's the status of that. Again, with a new change of leadership in the province, things might line up in their economy, things might turn around, but that's about it.
It's been bouncing along.
Yeah.
I can remember.
Yeah.
Okay, well, we're going to have a round table of reports.
Can we do, before we do this talk generally, I think there's five.
I can do anything.
There's five upcoming events that I think would be of interest to everybody. If that's okay to review really quick first.
Yeah.
And
let's do it.
In March, there's going to be a national conference on youth and boat building. Dick's going to be at in Alexandria Seaport.
That's right.
Anything you want to say about that?
Well, I think it's a wonderful idea. The Center for Wooden Boats kind of started it and had a couple of conferences in the early 1990s about it. And one of the participants in both conferences was Joe Yusha. He went back to Alexandria, Virginia, and started a youth and at-risk youth program.
At-risk.
At-risk, yes. Which is becoming very successful. And last year, he and I talked about, you know, doing it again and having one conference on the East Coast and one on the West Coast. And so he chose to be the East Coast. And the whole idea is to share knowledge of how you can do it, how you can, where you can, well, I won't go into details, but it will be involved with the themes of finding these youth in need, finding instructors for them, creating a curriculum, fundraising, and a future plan to sort of organized, as we have organized, all the maritime heritage organizations from coast to coast that are working with at-risk youth, so that they're learning through direct experience in maritime heritage. So it's going to be a very exciting opportunity, and it's getting filled up with people, so I think there are more and more maritime museums that want to know how to do it and not lose their shirt.
and
gain a lot of gold stars with their community.
A second conference in March is Sam's. Can you mention what you're doing with this?
Well, no, I've tried to reach all of you one way or another by emails. It's a conference on small boat documentation, basically, developing a list of boat types for the region. And Bill Dahl was a little shocked when I said the region extends from Alaska to San Diego. But I'm not trying to take it all over, but I think I'm sort of joking there. But certainly the Pacific Northwest, I'd like to develop a list of boat types that we have here, either and then from those determine which ones are extinct and which ones are extant. And then determine from that strategies for documentation and potential preservation. I'm concerned particularly about things like Seattle, a few of them down here, the like the Halibut schooners from right around 1910 and so on. Beautiful, there's probably about maybe 20 of them left in the region total. And they're too big really for most of us to take on as a preservation project. Has anybody documented them? No, not really. What about all the other types that are out there? So I've invited people from all over the country, but primarily I'd like to get a focus on get people from this region involved. And they come here March 6th, 5th, 6th, and actually 7th. And Todd Couteau is coming out from D.C. to demonstrate the laser scanning approaches. And we have two other speakers, one of them, I can't remember his name, from the Medford National Park. And he's been documenting indigenous boats from the heights of the Columbia Plateau. Got 40 of them identified and documented. So he can talk about those kind of boats. That's kind of interesting. And then Jim Cole from Seattle is going to come down and talk to the St. John's Gate in London in November. The Royal Society of Naval Architects about the evolution of eight different Northwest big boat types. So the idea, I think, is I don't have my hand on it entirely, but come up with some sort of classification system or list system, and then identify who's in sort of in charge of what regions. Nobody's going to take on that whole region, but at least be responsible for trying to collect data and coordinating that. And I'll certainly, through this organization, be glad to sort of be the record keeper if necessary. Try to work together. I'm just afraid that these things are going to be extinct. And also, I will just give you a little anecdote. Many of you know Doug Brooks, who's now in Japan again studying Japanese boats, but about a year ago, he decided in whatever county his little maritime museum is on Lake Champlain, they would go around and look to see how many boats that they could find that they didn't know about. And it was not a very good county, 17 boat types that they had not previously known about. For me, I was just over in Skamakawa last week, and one of our board members' husband is an old Gilmander, and he said, come on, I'll show you something. He says, I've got a trap skiff on here. I was thinking, the giant trap skiffs that they use for horsing. I'm walking the barn, and here's a sort of oversized duck boat. And what is this? And he says, this is a type of boat that was used from the turn of the century up to the 60s or 70s by trappers. Flat bottom, little punt to get in and out of the sloughs to put traps out. So there's one type that nobody even knew about. Nothing fancy, but it's a functional type.
Oh, one more thing that Sam told me last night is that there's a big trove of Native American canoes in Idaho.
That's what I'm talking about. Yeah. This fellow.
Yeah.
40 some odd canoes that he's documented, different types, on the Columbia Plateau. And then you think, again, we tend to think of not having any boats over there, but there's certainly modern boat builders building rig boats and all kinds of other boats over there, and then you go down to Klamath Falls, all the lakes had reed boats over there. How many of those reed boats are still in existence? Where are they? The problem I'm running into is one of territory. People are territorial. And I'm not trying to be territorial, I'm just trying to get stuff going. That's why I'm, you know, I'm not going to compete with you guys. I have enough trouble taking care of the boats I've got. But the other thing has to do more with an academic aspect of it. Most of you know about Museum Small Craft Association. You have a union list of boat types. Well, it's very useful in a sense because there's a list of boat types in some museums. And is the center involved with that? No.
We've had some boats on it.
Okay. But that really doesn't tell you, allow you to develop strategies for identification and preservation and documentation, because it tells you what's already protected. What I really want to know is what's not protected and what we should do about it. So when you start talking to the people that are involved with developing these lists or these classification systems, they treat it as if we're a taxonomy project, like botanical taxonomy, where there's definitely a sort of evolutionary tree. Well, that doesn't work for boats. Boats basically are just a list of boats. And all we're doing is on a round bottom or flat bottom, however you want it, wood, metal, however you want to start your classification system. It's just a way of organizing information as opposed to talking about evolutionary relationships. And I have a feeling if I don't control the conference pretty tightly, the whole thing is degenerate into this argument about, well, I think we ought to classify this boat.
Okay. So
I'm a little worried about that side.
So those are cool things in March. In May, I don't know if anyone's going, Council of American Maritime Museum is going to be at Mystic, I guess, 14th and 15th.
I'll be there.
All right. And then in June, I just wanted to alert you that the Washington Museum Association is going to be in Gig Harbor. And there is going to be kind of a maritime heritage theme, although not entirely. But the theme is called Casting a Broader Net, Building Community Through Collaboration. And calls for proposals are due February 12th. So the conference is June 16th through 18th in Gig Harbor. And then the other one is in October. The Museum Small Crafts Association, the national meeting will be held at the Center for Wooden Boats. That's the Tuesday, Wednesday, the 26th and 27th of October. But Monday and Thursday are going to be optional field trip days for them. And I think one of the days will probably, I mean, depending if you guys are up for it, it's Gig Harbor in Tacoma. And another day might be to go out to Port Tadlock and Port Townsend. Some might want to pack a trip down to Astoria before or after, so we want to make sure and communicate to the people who are coming that they can have a short trip or a longer trip and here are the things they can see, or Grace Harbor, or wherever else. Including the Monday and Thursday, that's the 25th through the 28th of October, and we are going to get some stuff up on our website and we'll send you an email about it. Those are the events I know about.
Thank you. Oh, one in September, and I've got the date, and I can give it to you, but the Maritime Heritage Alliance will be in Baltimore, and that's an event that is held every 3 years. 3 years ago, Betsy and I think Chuck went down. Several people from Northwest Seaport went to it in San Diego, but this year it's a triennial event, and it gets anywhere from 300 to 500 people, and it covers a really broad thing. It's got museum people, it's got lighthouse people, it's got ship owners, it's got it just covers an awful lot of good things, and it generally runs about 4 to 5 days, and it'll be in Baltimore, and the event I think the call for papers has gone out for anybody who would like to attend. It's a fabulous thing. It's been going on since somewhere in the early 80s.
And when is that going to be?
It's
going to
be September.
December?
No, September.
September.
September. In Baltimore.
Will they have their snow shoveled out by
then?
Yeah,
right, yes, they will. Chris Rausen is one of the people putting it together, and Chen Zucker
Chris is head of the USS Constellation Baltimore Maritime Museum.
Oh, yeah.
Fleet.
Yeah. No, I didn't write it in on my calendars yet. Sorry.
But
it's around the, it would be probably, it's the week of the 14th, 15th, 16th, 17th, 18th, give or take, right in that area.
Did you get enough? No.
Well, I've got it at home on the internet.
Yeah, can you just send it to everybody?
Sure, I can send it out, right? Forward it out.
And just, I don't know that anybody here is interested besides me, but the American Sail Training Association Regional Conference is in San Francisco on April 9th, and we'll be discussing the details of the Tall Ships 2011, the schedule for that, which is going to be a race around the Pacific. And I just talked to Mark Belvedere from Tonga last night for an hour. And they've got the King of Tonga has a, it's called Kailia, but it's the Royal Tongan, and I'm going to use a bad word, catamaran, probably not a catamaran, but the Royal Tongan vessel, and there is evidently a number of the South Pacific island nations. I think there are five nations that have large canoes, and there's going to be a race from Polynesia to Hawaii.
Oh my God.
And as we were talking, it sounds like that may actually be close on to that point in time when we'd actually be, when the ships would be arriving in Hawaii. Transpac has opened up a tall ships category for 2011. So we'll have a start, I think, 5 days early and 24 miles out, so we don't have to deal with the Channel Island.
One of the things that we've been trying to do with Tall Ships Challenge, at least in the Northwest, is have the native canoes and the resurgence of the canoe culture and tribal journeys and all that to the North Coast, the tribes involved in welcoming the tall ships, allowing them permission to land and all of that. So we've worked on that for years, ever since the Centennial. So I'm wondering if there's another opportunity to tie that in with the Pacific and all of that.
Oh, and there's a new curator at the UW, and she's with the Burke Museum, so she's faculty also in anthropology, and she's Native American. And she mentioned to me that she wants to do some sort of big exhibit thing at the Burke in a couple years, talking about the resurgence in the canoe culture. And so maybe I should give you her name.
Well, that would be good.
Give it to both of us, because we're also talking with a couple people within the tribal groups to do something as well. Continue this on.
Well, what I was going to say was that for 2011, we're actually looking at doing a program. We're gonna put both boats for the full circuit. So we'll start in the Pacific Northwest, sail with one crew down to San Francisco, then Los Angeles. We'll change crews, sail from Los Angeles to Hawaii, and then sail from Hawaii back up to Tacoma. And one of the concepts that we're kicking around, and I think we have someone that's going to help us do that, is to put canoe kids from each of the communities. Out of Santa Barbara, there was a tribe that had canoes that actually the Channel Islands were their territory. And so we're looking at getting kids from the Pacific Northwest, kids from Hawaii, and kids from the Santa Barbara area that are all native kids, and you know, two or three kids on each boat to make that trip. So whenever you arrive, one of your shipmates is a local, and to be able to, you know, sort of connect those canoe cultures around.
That's
so
very cool.
One of the things that happened during the Centennial was, you know, we not only had the first Paddle to Seattle and the start of the resurgence of the canoe culture among the tribes, but as many of you know, various communities built longboats. And so we have a whole group of longboats for our European-American maritime history, and then we have the resurgence of the canoe culture and the development of replica canoes and that. But as we've seen through the years, we tended to do individual activities related to each of those groups. In other words, the Indian tribes have been doing their thing with canoe journeys, and we've been doing our thing with Pacific Challenge and all that. Groups basically, except in a couple instances, have not really come together and exchanged seats and canoes and longboats and all of that. So that would be another great element to add to the whole Tall Ships Challenge and focusing attention on that for the future. I think, you know, for all of us, I don't see many Native board members in our organizations, and I don't see too many non-white faces involved in our organizations. And that's not them what we've been doing or how we've been doing it, but maybe it's time to get a little more diversity in the culture and honor that heritage, which has been with us for a long time, and then make it happen today with the young kids and some of the elders who are interested in moving ahead with us. And there are some leaders that want to do that. So.
I don't know if you know, but in Seattle there's going to be another focus on Indian heritage, and they're at South Lake Union, and they put in quite an extensive area where canoes can be pulled out, and they're going to be starting on a longhouse and a canoe house. So that will, I don't know when will be open, but they are raising money and getting it established.
United Indians of all tribes and all of that, there's activity in Tacoma the same way. Tom's got Philip Red Eagle driving a canoe there. So there are little, as I say, there's little pockets of activity, and if through the council or through Les and AFCA or whoever, if we could bring these things together, and including Columbia River and our friends in British Columbia who have been deeply involved in this kind of activity, that'd be fantastic, and something that's not done in other regions of the United States.
Jerry developed, before he left, quite a good relationship with the Chinook people, and they're still fighting for their official designation and recognition. But I've already talked with them about the possibility that they could be using part of the depot to build, just like you have with Saduk. I'm shameless. I'll copy you anytime I can. So,
hey, not copying. It's
Sharing.
I think that they'd be very interested. The problem they have is that they don't have anybody that knows how to build the Chinooking canoes anymore. So Saduk or somebody like that would have to be invited. He's very diplomatic about it, but he'd have to be invited down by the tribe to help teach them that skills and so on. But it'd be very interesting.
Yeah, another initiative the council maybe can help facilitate. So, put it on the to-do list.
Just to add a book. I looked up the Maritime Heritage Conference date in Baltimore. It's September 15th through 19th.
Okay.